It's important. So I cannot stress this enough. You got to make a decision. Hey, during those time blocks where I got to concentrate, I got to remove the distractions. Then, and this sounds so dumb to even have to say it, the next step is you got to remove them. I'm not claiming this is rocket science. I'm also not going to tell you that it's easy. I think sometimes the simplest things in life are the hardest things to do. But I promise you that if you use the 5-second rule, you'll actually do it. When you start to remove distractions and you're able to focus on the moment-to-moment things that actually matter, you'll have no idea how much this is going to help. This is what Karen said when she took an hour. That's what she did. She took an hour, she forced herself to stay focused, and she reprogrammed her phone and her computer simply to remove pop-ups and email alerts so that she, when she was working on something and writing, she wouldn't get interrupted. You have no idea, Karen writes, how much you have helped me. No idea. Every single day from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Now, I was talking about this with my high school age daughter, Kendall. She loves social media. Oh my gosh. As she likes to say, you know, her Instagram feed was nothing but French bulldogs and supermodels wearing bathing suits. She just was constantly mainlining that and what her friends were doing. And she was spending so much time on her phone. What do you think it was impacting? School. That's right, school. And it's interesting because it didn't matter to her in 8th grade, but when she got into 9th grade and she watched her sister start going through the process of college applications and she got a peek at what was coming down the pike, she had a wake-up call. She was like, oh my gosh, holy cow, if I want to have some choices about where I go after high school, maybe I should pay attention to high school. And we got into this conversation because I said to her, well, one of the things that I've noticed is you spend an awful lot of time on social media. And as we got into it, she was able to admit, she said, you know, the other thing too, in addition to it distracting her, is that she was starting to feel insecure because she was constantly comparing herself to the social media posts of celebrities and supermodels and bathing suit websites and people that were doing nothing but traveling for a living. And it was making her feel like she was a complete loser. Now, just like you and me, she knew that social media was making her less productive. She knew it was making her less happy. She knew it was making her feel insecure. And she also knew what was actually important to her, spending more time on her schoolwork and feeling better about herself. So I was shocked. This was not my idea, because you know, as the parent, if you suggest something, kids are biologically wired to tell you it's a stupid idea. Kendall decided on her own, and this surprised me, I would not have expected this of her, that the best way to manage the distraction of social media would be to get rid of the temptation. She didn't delete her Instagram account. You can still find her on there, but you know what she did? She deleted the app from her phone. She made it that much harder to check. That's one of the things that you can do. It's sort of like if you're quitting cigarettes, do not have them in the kitchen cupboard in case you have an emergency. Get rid of them so that it becomes harder to get access to the things that distract you. This is why it's important to turn off the alerts. It's why it's important for you to disable the pop-ups. This is why it's important for you not to put those apps on your phone. I'm going to tell you something. I am a commentator for CNN. And so part of my job is to be at the ready if one of our anchors, an Anderson Cooper or Don Lemon or, you know, Chris Cuomo or Brooke Baldwin, if somebody needs me on their show, one of the things that's really important is to be at the ready to step onto television and talk intelligently about news. Now, there's a very rare occurrence with breaking news where I'll be asked to jump onto the television with no warning whatsoever. There's something catastrophic that happens, or you get like an instant update on some story that we've been following and we weren't expecting it. And typically if that happens to you, you're standing in the 5th floor newsroom in New York City and they grab you and you're on the set and boom, here we go. When more likely you're asked, you usually have a half an hour or so or an hour of time before you're going to go on live television. So you got plenty of time if you are good at what you do. And believe me, if you're on the payroll at CNN, you're very good at what you do. And what happened for me is I started to notice that all day long, you know what I would be filling my time up with? I would be tapping an app. I'd be reading the news. I'd be filling my head with all kinds of information about all kinds of stuff that I may or may not talk about just in case. Like, it was just this habit that I developed. And I was so distracted all the time because I was constantly checking it because it was on my phone. And I made a decision as I was writing this book because I noticed it was really hard for me to sit down and focus. It was hard for me to sit down and get through a chapter of this book or look through social media posts and pick the ones that I wanted to share with you. And I realized, holy cow, it's because I've trained my brain to go to my phone every 5 minutes and open up one of the news apps on my phone. This is a problem. It's impacting my ability to focus. And so the solution, ironically, is exactly the same as what Kendall did. I removed every single news app on my phone except for CNN. Every single one. I turned off every single news notification on my phone. Every one of them. Because I figured if it was important, somebody would call me. And if I was going to be on television, I would have at least 30 minutes to an hour to dig into the story and research and come up with something that would be valuable to say in 60 seconds or less. And I cannot underscore how that one half an hour where I removed apps, turned off notifications, I feel like I got my brain back. Truly. And in some ways, it made me even better at my job because when I'm called on, now I go deep. Instead of constantly dipping my toe in the water all day long, all day long, all day long, all day long on the news, I now do deep research if I'm going on to talk. Tomorrow morning, carve out time. We're going to talk about this a little bit later in the chapter, but this will change your life. It will give your brain a gigantic, oh, thank you for giving me space to think about the shit that's important instead of all this stuff that's popping up on your phone. You know, in Kendall's words, this is what my ninth grader said. After deleting the Instagram app, it dawned on me how unimportant the stuff is to my life. When those apps were on my phone, it was an involuntary action to click on it and look. Now that the apps are gone, I don't have the urge to look at it ever. Isn't that interesting? You know, if you're driving down the highway and traffic's moving along, do you have the urge to look around in case there's an accident? No. But if you're driving past an accident, it's tempting. It's right there in front of you. This is why it's so important. And by the way, distractions are not only in the form of technology and social media. Sarah found that her clutter, so the garbage all around her, was a major distraction in her life. Do you have one of those desks at work where there's just piles of unfinished stuff everywhere? I'm telling you right now, it's distracting you. She decided to take action when she learned the 5-second rule. She said that she used the rule to beat emotional hoarding. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, donated, recycled, sold, and trashed so much stuff. Here's what she wrote. I'm using the 5-second rule to declutter my life. I'm an emotional hoarder and it was becoming problematic. So when I'm clearing through my junk, I make a choice in 5 seconds. And sure enough, it works. I've donated, recycled, sold, and trashed a lot of things in the past few weeks. Now it feels amazing not to be bogged down by useless stuff. I told you at the beginning of this book, you can change your life in 5 seconds. And that's because in 5 seconds, you can make a decision. And decisions have the power to change everything. By clearing through her junk in 5-second decisions, Sarah now feels amazing. Distractions bog you down, whether they're physical or they're technological. So if you find yourself getting distracted like Kendall was by social media, or me, by the apps and the notifications on my phone, or Sarah by her surroundings, that moment of awareness, I want you to grab onto it. That is a moment of power. It's a moment when you wake up, and now it's time to shake up your environment. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, remove the distraction. It really is that simple, but we don't stop to do it, and the rewards are so powerful. Now, the harder and more important thing to master after you kind of get rid of these surface level distractions is I want you to master the second type of focus, and that's big picture focus. There's one thing that I've used the 5-second rule to do that has increased my big picture focus like nothing else. And that, my friends, is being a boss about my mornings. From now on, I want you to own your mornings. Taking control of your mornings is a game changer for productivity. The way I did it was simple. I created a morning routine, and it's a routine that makes me feel like $1 million. Alyssa found, after she implemented her own morning routine, she started to rule her days like a boss too. Here's what she wrote. Okay, I've become a little obsessed with Mel Robbins and her 5-second rule message. I love it, and I'm practicing her rules, getting up early. I hate that, but I want to love it. Eating breakfast, coffee I don't normally eat, not touching my phone till after I've cleared my mind, setting my intentions, and ruling my day. Now, one thing I do want to say to Alyssa is that for 7 years now, I've been using the 5-second rule to get out of bed. I still hate it. You may never be a, quote, morning person. I am not a morning person, but I am a boss of my mornings. Big difference. See, I think a morning person is somebody that just springs out of bed like a jackalope, right? Woo, you're so excited to be up and you wake up feeling fresh and your breath smells good and woo, let's get the day started. That is not how my day goes. I'm more like a wildebeest that has to roll out of bed and I'm really not a human until I have a cup of coffee. But I don't have to be a morning person in order to become a boss of my morning. I don't have to like getting up early in order to understand the power and the impact that taking control of those morning hours, what that will have for your life, for the amount of money that you make, for how you feel about yourself. This is so critical for you to get. So just as Alyssa said, when you create a morning routine and you actually follow it, you set your intentions, you get yourself organized, over and over, I'm going to guarantee something. You are going to trigger a chain of events that are going to shock you. I owe my morning routine to Duke University professor Dan Ierley. He gave me the inspiration and that little scientific kernel that I needed in order to be inspired enough to get my butt out of bed, continue to do it, and do something productive with my mornings. Here's what you need to know from Professor Ierley. According to him, the first 2 to 3 hours of the day are the best hours for your brain. Let me say that again. The first 2 to 3 hours of the day are the best hours for your brain. So if you pop out of bed at 6 o'clock, your peak thinking, your peak productivity, it's going to be from about 6 to 9 o'clock in the morning. That's it. The best time for your brain, the first 2 to 3 hours of the day. If your household is anything like mine, most mornings are pure chaos. And the problem is do you really want to chew through the best 2 to 3 hours for your brain doing a bunch of mindless crap? I don't think so. I think your dreams are way too important for that. I mean, for me, the moment I wake up, we got to feed the dog, you got to get breakfast ready, you got to get 3 school-age kids out the door. That can take an entire hour out of that precious 2 to 3 hours that I got. When I read this research and I thought about what my mornings actually looked like, snoozing and, you know, at least an hour of prep to get out of the house, I realized I better get serious. I want to build a multi-million dollar business. I want to get in the best shape of my life. I want to do a bunch of things that really light me up. I better get serious about how I spend my mornings if I want the rest of my days to really be amazing. And so I started to get up a little bit earlier, so I had time to focus on my big picture goals before the day hijacked me. Now I want to walk you through my morning routine. And it is critical. This is the reason why I can get so much done, truly. It is the secret to my success, that and the 5-second rule. But the morning piece, absolutely critical. So here's my routine. Number one, when the alarm rings, I get up. Period. The alarm rings, I get up. That's number one. Now, we went over the importance of this when you learned about the wake-up challenge. The alarm rings, get up, the end. What could be more simple than that? For peak productivity, though, you should never, I mean never, hit the snooze button. This is something I learned that's brand new, that I learned researching this book. And boy, oh boy, when I explain it to you, is it going to answer a big mystery and a big misconception about the snooze button. There's actually a neurological reason why you should never, ever hit the snooze button. Now, you know, I'm going to explain it to you. You know that getting a good night's sleep is important for productivity, right? Well, I bet you didn't know that how you wake up is not only as important, it's actually in some cases more important than how you sleep. Scientists have recently discovered that when you hit the snooze button, it has a negative impact on brain function and productivity that can last up to 4 hours. It's called sleep inertia. I'm going to explain it to you, and you really need to pay attention. This is one of these changes that really changes everything about how you think about what you're doing. So first of all, here's what you need to know about sleep. When you and I fall asleep, we sleep in cycles, and cycles take about 90 to 110 minutes, okay? So all night long, you're sleeping in these 90 to 110 minute cycles. One begins, it goes for 90 to 110 minutes, it ends. Then another one starts, 90 to 110 minutes, it ends. Another one starts, 90 to 110, and so on and so on. About 2 hours before you're about to wake up. So let's say you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. At about 4 o'clock in the morning, your body's gone through 4 or 5 sleep cycles. Now it goes into a different mode. It goes into a 2-hour mode where it's going to slowly start to wake your body up. It's bringing your body from this state where you're going sleep cycle, sleep cycle, sleep cycle into a mode where now you're like thawing out. You're kind of slowly coming back so that when your alarm rings, or if you didn't set the alarm because it's the weekend, when your body's ready to wake up after about 2 hours of kind of thawing out, you're ready to start your day. Now, that's all well and good. But if you now hear the alarm, you wake up, like me, you're stressed about your life, you don't want to get up, so you hit the snooze button. Guess what happens? When you hit the snooze button and you now drift back to sleep, what do you suppose your body now thinks it's supposed to do? Your body, after you hit the snooze button and go back to sleep, guess what? It goes back into a sleep cycle. How long do those take? 90 to 110 minutes. Have you ever had that experience where, you know, it's the weekend and the alarm goes off and you just turn it off and you go back to bed? Ever notice how you wake up and you're like, oh shit, I slept for like 90 minutes. I just meant to doze off for 10 minutes. You always sleep for over an hour if you turn off your alarm. That's because you've started a new sleep cycle. Here's the problem with the snooze button. The alarm goes off. You hit the snooze. You fall back to sleep, your body's now in a 90 to 110 minute cycle, and then boom, the alarm goes off 10 minutes later. Well, here's the problem. Physically, you can wake up and get out of bed. Mentally, the cortic region of your brain, it cannot shake itself out of a sleep cycle. You've now screwed yourself. You know how you have those days at work where you're like, God, I'm just so tired, I just can't wake up. That's a medical condition that's called sleep inertia. How is it that people get sleep inertia? By hitting the snooze button starting a sleep cycle and then interrupting it again 10 minutes later and forcing themselves to wake up. If you find that you are constantly tired, I guarantee you it's not because you're not getting enough sleep. It's because you keep hitting the snooze button and you are starting sleep cycles, interrupting them, and causing your brain to operate in a condition where it can't wake itself up. It'll take your brain about 4 hours, scientists say, in order to come out of sleep inertia. Seriously. I mean, it makes a lot of sense when you actually start to think about it. So, I'm dead serious. The alarm goes off. I don't care how tired you are. You get out of bed. Not negotiable. It is going to blow for about 4 minutes. But by the time you're done brushing your teeth, you will be awake. And what you won't be is you won't be setting yourself up for sleep inertia and 4 hours of no productivity because you started a new sleep cycle. Here's another trick that I do sometimes. This isn't every morning, but if I'm super, super tired, or maybe I do have to wake up and I've only had 4 hours of sleep, I use a trick that Tony Robbins taught me. Tony believes in these immersion baths. I have a cheaper way to do it. It's called a cold shower. It is the worst thing in the world. I am such a sissy about it that I will turn on the water to freezing cold, and all I have to do, I won't even get my head in there. I'll stick my arm in. That's literally enough. Freezing cold water on the arm and the shoulder, and that's enough. And boom, you're awake. It's weird. Really works if you need a quick trick, but do not go back to bed. After I've gotten up after the alarm rings, next I walk into the bathroom and I turn off the alarm. Here's another trick I want you to steal for peak productivity. My husband and I, we do not sleep with the phones or alarm clocks in our bedrooms. There is a no phone rule in our household in the bedroom. Where's the phone, you might ask? It's in the bathroom. It's close enough so that I can hear it if like CNN's calling and they want to, because sometimes they'll call in the middle of the night to see if I can jump on a morning show or something, but it's far enough away so that when the alarm rings in the morning, I have to get out of bed to go turn it off. Now, here's the other reason. The main reason why it's not in the bedroom is because I understand the hardwiring of human beings. If something is near you that's tempting, you'll grab it. If I have that phone on my nightstand, you know what's going to happen? I am going to grab it without thinking. I'm going to lie in bed at night and I'm going to read emails. I'm going to hit the alarm and turn it off, and then I'm going to lie in bed and I'm going to check the news and I'm going to read emails and I'm going to look at tests and I'm going to see social media. And that's before I even get out of bed. And I know that you're guilty of the same thing. If the phone's within reach, it's easy to grab without thinking. Do you realize that a majority of adults read emails before they get out of bed in the morning? I think that that's kind of common sense at this point, that most people think that people are reading emails in bed in the morning. Here's a study that should really wake you up. Deloitte recently did a big research project on this, and in the project, they found that a third of adults and half of people under the age of 35 are waking up in the middle of the night, interrupting their sleep. Third of adults, half of people under the age of 35 wake up in the middle of the night to check their phones that are sitting right next to them. And half of them probably don't even remember that they're doing this. So when I put my phone in the bathroom, I make it impossible for me to succumb to a temptation of grabbing it and reading it. And I'm also setting myself up for a great night's sleep. And more importantly, in the big picture on procrastination, I am putting what's important to me and my goals. I'm giving them a fighting freaking chance to become the top priority of the day. Because if I start reading email and I start reading news and I start looking at social media, you know what my brain just got flooded with? Other people's crap. If you're the kind of person that feels like you never find the time for the stuff that's important to you, if you feel like you can never say no, if you feel frustrated because you can't make headway on projects that matter, one of the most important things that you can do, put your damn phone in the bathroom, do not have it in your bedroom. You have got to figure out how to find time for yourself before you check in with the rest of the world. So now the next thing that I do, so we've gotten up when the alarm rings. We've walked into the bathroom. We've turned off the alarm. If you notice what I haven't done yet, I haven't looked at my phone. I might have turned off the alarm, have not checked it yet, have not read it yet, have not picked it up yet. I use the next 3 to 5 minutes of time to wash my face, floss my teeth, and then I just sort of let my mind wander. I start thinking about, all right, today, what is it that I really need to do today for me? Forget about what your job wants. Forget about what your kids want. Forget about what your spouse needs of you. What do you, your life, your goals, your business, your dreams, what are things that are important to you? I don't want you creating a to-do list. I want you thinking about things that matter. Like, what are the big things that you never find time to work on? I want you to think about those. And then I want you to think about just two things. What are two things that you could do today to forward that book that you want to write? What are two things that you could do today to forward that job search? What are two things that you could do today that could really help expand that business that you're growing? What could you do on something that matters to you? And usually this is the stuff you don't feel like doing, by the way. That's why you never get around to it. What do I do next? So I got these two things in my mind. Well, I get dressed. I make my bed. I walk into the kitchen. I pour a cup of coffee. Have you noticed what I haven't done yet? I haven't picked up my phone. I haven't looked at my email. By the way, my phone is still in my bathroom. When I go out into the kitchen to have a cup of coffee, I leave my phone in the bathroom. Why? Same reason as not putting it on the nightstand. If it's sitting next to me on the island or at the kitchen table, I will pick it up and I will look at it. I am just like a dog. If there is a bone there, man, I'm chewing it. I'm the same way with the phone. That's why I leave it in the bathroom. I'm setting myself up for success. This is not only important, it's essential. The moment you check email, you read the news, you surf social media, someone else's priority is going to jump in front of yours. Do you think Bill Gates lays in bed and reads his email in the morning? No. Do you think Oprah does? No. Do you think Richard Branson is lying there in bed reading your emails? No, he is not. The reason why is because they got stuff to do. They know that what they're up to is more important than anything that could be in that inbox. That's why you gotta find time to put yourself first. So you must not check email until you plan your day. That one rule right there, no phone in the bedroom, do not check it, plan my day first. That is a discipline that has become a habit, that it is a hallmark of why I can build multi-million dollar businesses. Seriously. I'm not going to be doing that if I'm looking at what Zappos has on sale. Okay? That's not helping me. The scores from last night's game, not going to help you with your goals. It's just not. You got to get serious about your priorities. So the next thing that I do in my cheapo day planner, I just write down the one, two, or three things that I thought about when I was brushing my teeth. These are things I got to do today. They're important for me. Why do I write them down? Well, yes, I am almost 50 years old, and so I forget things if I try to hold them upstairs. But more importantly, research coming out of University of California, 42% more likely for you to stick to your goals if you write them down. There's science behind this. And there's a common sense reason. If you write them down, you're probably going to see them. And then you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, mm-hmm. Because I just checked the scores, and then I forgot about what was important. Oh, I just looked at the sales at Zappos, and now I forgot about what's important. Having them written in my planner means I'm going to see them. Now, the next thing that I do is, so I write down the two things I need to do. Then I write down why. Why do I want to do this? Why would I possibly want to reach out to literary agents today? Why would I possibly want to get to the gym today? Why does this matter to me? Having that why statement makes my goals feel so much more important. Now, I don't use my electronic calendar. And the reason why is because if I put it in the electronic calendar, this little two things that I'm gonna do today, I'm not gonna see it. I'm a visual person. You gotta find a way so that you can see it every day. The two things that are important, why you feel like you should do it. Now, the next thing that I do. So we've gotten up when the alarm rings. We brush our teeth, turn off the alarm, think about what's important. We leave the phone in the bathroom. We haven't checked it yet. We go in, we kind of plan out the two things we're going to do, the reason why we're going to do it. Then I take 30 before 7:30 a.m. 30 before 7:30 a.m. What is that? Well, 30 minutes before 7:30 a.m. The reason why I do it before 7:30 a.m. is because my kids leave the house at 7 a.m. And so those 30 minutes between 7 and 7:30, those are kind of the moment, the first moment that I got amidst the chaos in the morning to actually do anything that is substantive. So I plan out and often execute the most important things that I got to do first between 7 and 7:30 a.m. I call this 30 before 7:30. Now, I use this time to plan my day, and I also use this time to start working on those things that I thought about, the two things that are most important to me. Here's the deal. You cannot do this planning session at work, and you know why. The second you walk into work, what happens? You get hijacked. You cannot do this planning session after you've checked email. Why? The second you look at email, you've already got stuff you're going to do. Your stuff's no longer as important. You've just lost the priority game. Productivity comes down to the ability for you to put your stuff first. So if you have to do this at your home, if you have to do this at a coffee shop, if you have to do this on the train into work or the bus into work or sitting in your car in the parking lot, that's where you do it. If you can't find 30 minutes, find five. The discipline here is around getting up, thinking, writing down a couple things that are important, carving out a little bit of time to just make some progress, and doing all of that before you check your phone. Professor Carlson studied how CEOs get so much accomplished. You know what she found out? The secret of every high power executive that you know? They work at home before they go to work. The average CEO of a publicly traded company says that they can only find about 20 minutes of time uninterrupted at work. And I guarantee you, for you, it's even less, because they at least have an assistant that keeps people away. So I am dead serious about this. You've got to remember, because of Professor Ierley, let's go back to the beginning. Why did I even start this in the first place? The first 2 to 3 hours of the day are the best hours for your brain to focus on the tasks or goals that advance your professional goals. It's when your best thinking happens. It's when your highest speed of processing happens. It's the time of day before you've been bombarded by thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of marketing messages. It's when you're your freshest. You got to fight for this. You will never feel like you're making headway on anything that's important until you start to make that stuff important enough to find a little bit of time. For your happiness, you've got to protect this. You got to fight for it. Finally, this was a really interesting piece of research that I found that I started to implement that's made a big difference in my life balance and in how effective I am. So we've woken up on time. We have turned off the alarm, brushed our teeth, thought about, you know, what's important to us. We've left the phone in the bathroom. We've gone into the kitchen. We've had a quick cup of coffee. We've written down what's important. We've carved out 5 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever we can to make some progress. Now, before you pick up your phone, there's a final thing I want you to do. This is what I do every morning. Plan your quitting time. When are you going to stop working today? What time are you going to stop working? You're going to put down your phone. You're going to stop answering work emails. You're going to actually, you don't have to fully unplug. I would never expect you to do that. But at what time are you going to stop working so that you can actually be a human being and enjoy yourself? It is so important that you do this. When I start my day, I determine what time I'm going to stop working. And having a deadline does two really important things. Number one, it's going to make you way more intentional with the time that you have. And number two, it's going to make you, believe it or not, more productive. There's a principle called Parkinson's Law. And here's how that principle goes. Work expands to whatever time that you give it. So I want you to give your work day a deadline. And a deadline is really important for stamina and for mental health. I want to give you an example about Parkinson's law that happens to me right now. What's fascinating is that, you know, I've talked a little bit about CNN, and when I'm asked to write for CNN, I often get two types of requests. So as we're recording this book, we're near the end of the year, and so CNN has asked me if I will submit an article about predictions for the following year. And they've given me a week to do it. How long do you think it's going to take me to write this article? They've given me a week. It's going to take me a week. I'm going to think all week about it. I'm going to kind of contemplate it. I'm going to be kind of noodling it a little bit. And then I'll probably sit down to write it a couple hours before it's due. That is an example of Parkinson's law. Your work, the projects that you have, they expand and fill the amount of time that you give to them. Now, let's contrast that with another example. If CNN were to call me, or Success Magazine, where I'm a contributing editor, were to call me as soon as, you know, right now, and say, oh my gosh, Mel, we need an article, 500 words in an hour on this topic. Can you do it? I'd say yes. How long would it take me? An hour. Same length article, by the way, as the predictions on 2017, but I was given a week, so it'll take me a week. If somebody gives me an hour and we shrink the amount of time and I suddenly have a deadline, my work will actually fit into that deadline. You can use that to your advantage. And a deadline is important because I think more than ever, we do not take enough time to take a break from work and actually enjoy ourselves, to take a break from work and give our brains the breathing space in order to refuel itself so it can do its best work tomorrow. Now look, I'm not going to lie. There are plenty of times where I've set a deadline in the morning and 8:30 rolls around. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not done. And I got a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, turn off the computer, shut it down, stop working. And it happens more often than I'd like to admit that I have to do that. But setting a deadline has been a really cool concept that has changed things for me. Using a daily routine, it's helped me in ways that are really hard to describe. It's how I put my priorities ahead of putting out fires. I used to be the kind of person that was running around like a chicken with my head cut off. Nowadays, with so much that I have going on, not only can I not afford to be, but I don't want to be. I always, every single day, make a little bit of progress on something that's super important to me. And I feel way more in control because I'm owning my actions from the moment the alarm rings. And I have a heck of a lot more clarity about what this day is about and what is important to me because I've defined it. It's really that simple. You know this. The problem is life has a way of just creeping in and pulling you in a different direction. If I notice that I've, you know, lost track during the day or I'm getting distracted, that's a moment of power. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Flip open my cheapo day planner, take a look at what I wrote down, and I get back on track. Now, I want you to try this. Get up when the alarm rings, turn off the phone in the bathroom, leave it there, don't check it, think about what's important to you, write down the two things that are important to you, write down why, find 30 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever you can find before 7:30 to work on and plan your day, plan your quitting time, then watch all the damn cat videos you want. Seriously. And see what happens. I'm telling you, it's simple. It's obvious and it works. Customize it, but by all means, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and do it. And when you do the work to be the boss of your day, it is an incredible game changer. I want to leave you with this. Christine wrote me this after trying this. I have learned that I can push myself to limits I never thought possible. I have learned it is simple as 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thanks, Mel. The 5-second rule is a real game changer. I have learned that no matter what you want, if you work hard enough, it will and it can happen. I have met some of the most amazing people that have achieved the highest rank possible within our company, and I have learned so many tips and tricks to work my business. My mind is spinning and on fire. It's been a real game changer. Guess what? Now it's your turn to change your game. Chapter 11, End Procrastination. The 5-second rule is an incredible weapon in the fight against procrastination. Before we dig into how you're going to use it, I'd like to define procrastination, what it is and what it isn't. You know, in researching this book, I was really surprised when I learned what causes procrastination. And I learned that I had procrastination all wrong. I was also surprised to learn that there are two kinds of procrastination. There's destructive procrastination, which is when you and I avoid the tasks that we need to complete. And then there's productive procrastination, which is a critical part of any creative process. So let's get started with the good kind. Let's talk about productive procrastination. If you're working on a creative project or an innovative idea, or you're trying to disrupt something in your industry, research shows that procrastination is not only good, it's actually really important. You see, the creative process, it takes a lot of time. So when you set a project aside, you know, we call it procrastinating, but if you set it aside for a few days or weeks, it allows time for your mind to wander. And when you give a big project time for your mind to wander, it gives you the ability to come up with these divergent ideas that actually enhance your project. Productive procrastination is hugely liberating. You know, when I learned about it researching this book, I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't realize there was a good kind of procrastination. The truth is, I really struggled to write this book. I'm very good at speaking. I am not a great writer. It does not come naturally to me. I would beat myself up constantly because I kept feeling burnt out. I constantly had writer's block. I was filled with self-doubt. I would write entire chapters and then just completely scrap them. I said, oh, the reason why this is so hard is I am a bad writer. I just told you I was a bad writer. I'm lazy. I'm incapable. This book sucks. This isn't a good idea. I mean, it was just disastrous. And in truth, a creative process like the one that I had taken on with this book, particularly one that involved publishing almost 150 social media stories along with writing the book, it was a monster. And the fact is, when you take on a big project, your mind needs breaks. It needs time to wander, and we almost never build that into any project, do we? Oh, I'm going to work really hard for a day, and then I'm going to set it aside for 3 days. Now you're like, okay, I got 4 days to finish this. I got to go. So it took me 7 months longer than I thought it would to finish this book. And I'll tell you what, the book is 100 times better because of it. So if you're not getting the results that you want, I want you to give the project that you're working on a little bit of time. Go focus your energy somewhere else and then come back a little bit later and you'll be able to bring fresh eyes to it. This is for projects that don't have a fixed deadline. You know, we tend to put deadlines on things that you may or may not truly need to be pounding yourself on. If you've got a creative project, if you've got something that's really important that matters to you and you don't have to, it's not life or death that you finish it at a certain time, I want you to understand that it's not procrastinating if you let your work sit for a few weeks. Your mind has to wander. It's the creative process. And those fresh new ideas that you have as you procrastinate productively, it's going to make your work even better. So that's the good kind, productive procrastination. That is a choice. It's a decision that you make when you say, you know what? I just hit a wall. I'm going to put this aside for a little bit. The other kind of procrastination is the one that you and I want to understand and then eviscerate. And that is destructive procrastination. It's an entirely different animal. It's when you're avoiding things that need to get done. And you know that there is going to be negative consequences. And this can really come back to bite you in the end. Now, I don't think there's a human being on the planet that doesn't have a pile of stuff that you're procrastinating on. Updating photo albums, analyzing spreadsheets, finishing a proposal, maybe cleaning out dad's house, plowing through a to-do list. It's anything. You can procrastinate on anything, raking the front yard. And, you know, it can really start to eat at you. Evelyn found herself procrastinating and beating herself up. As she said, I've questioned everything about myself for years. She put the rule into effect, and let's hear what she had to say. Mel, I got up yesterday after I put the rule into effect. I've questioned everything about myself for years. I start, I stop, I'm nothing, I'm something. I cleaned my living room, my kitchen, my dining room, and did 7 loads of laundry, and I was amazing. That's just the beginning. I'm impressed. I impressed myself. I am signed up for the 5-second rule. My husband is signed up, and I am ready to move. You know, here's the thing, though. It is very liberating when you push through whatever it is that you're procrastinating on. But most of us don't even know why we're procrastinating. I think for a long time, I certainly thought that procrastination meant that I was terrible at time management. It meant that I had no willpower, meant that I had no self-discipline, that I wasn't organized. Boy, was I wrong. Procrastination is not a form of laziness. Did you know that? Not a form of laziness. Procrastination actually has nothing to do with work. I bet you didn't know that. Procrastination is a coping mechanism for stress. And I'm going to explain it to you. Procrastination. The dude is like the world's leading expert on it. So Dr. Pitchell has found that the main thing that drives procrastination is not your desire to avoid work. It's avoiding stress. Procrastination is nothing more than a subconscious desire to feel good right now so that you can feel a little bit of stress release. A common mistake that we all make is thinking that people make a deliberate decision to procrastinate. Like, oh, I'm just going to blow that off. In fact, most folks who struggle with procrastination tell researchers that they feel like they have zero control over it. And they're right, because most of us don't understand the real reason why we procrastinate. So you're not procrastinating because you hate work. You're procrastinating because you feel stressed. That's right. Let me say that again. You don't procrastinate because you hate work. You procrastinate because you feel stressed out. And here's the catch. You're not stressed about work. You're stressed about bigger stuff. You're stressed about money. You're stressed about relationships. You're stressed about your life or your future. When you blow off work or you blow off studying for 15 minutes of online shopping or watching the highlights of last night's football game, you know what you're doing? You're not avoiding work so much as you're taking a mini stress break from the bigger stresses you feel overall. It's sort of like emotional eating for the mind. When you avoid something that feels hard, you get a little sense of relief. And then when you throw in something that you like surfing Facebook or laughing at a viral video, you also get a little boost of dopamine. And the more often you procrastinate, the more likely you're going to repeat the behavior. And here's the problem. While you get a little boost of relief when you watch a cat video, over time, the work that you keep blowing off, it starts to build. And guess what that creates? More stress. And when you feel more stressed, what do? You procrastinate. There's a great example that Scott provides. He wrote to me because he wanted to, quote, get help getting out of his own head. And that's a huge theme in this book. We spend way too much time thinking and not enough time getting out of our heads and into action. He said that everyone close to him had always said, I'm the one thing that's holding me back. And they're right. So Scott is a PhD student. And he's performing research in a physiology lab, and he's married, and he and his wife just had their first kid, and he describes him as the most beautiful baby boy. Well, let me read more of the email that Scott wrote to me. Mel, everything at home is incredible despite lots of financial stress, which would be expected considering that I'm in school. My issue is that in my daily life and branching into school and lab work, I have trouble fulfilling obligations, which is starting to become a problem. Basically, I put off things continuously until it reaches the point where I've either missed a deadline or it upsets somebody. I have very high expectations for myself, and I literally go to sleep every night telling myself that tomorrow is going to be that fresh start that I need, and I'm going to tackle everything with tons of energy. But then I fail day after day, and that confidence in overcoming this by myself is starting to fade. Basically, I don't feel like I'm living anywhere near my full potential, and it's frustrating. Now, reading Scott's note, you can see that he's trapped. He's trapped in a vicious cycle of feeling disappointed in himself, And boy, I can totally relate to him because I felt that exact same way as I was struggling just to get myself out of bed. Now here's the other thing. Scott knows exactly what he needs to do, doesn't he? He's got to attack the work and get it done. But he can't seem to make himself do it. You know, we see this problem throughout the book. You saw it, remember, with Catherine in Plano, Texas. She knew what she needed to do. She needed to speak up in that meeting. But she couldn't make herself do it. Now, Scott's note gives me a chance to explain what's actually going on when somebody procrastinates. Now, let's look into the details. He told us the clues. He and his wife are under a lot of financial stress. Now, see, here's the deal. The financial stress doesn't feel very good, does it? That also explains the reason why he's procrastinating. He walks into the lab every morning and Scott is stressed out. They got bills to pay. They got a lot going on. And when he feels stressed out, he starts to procrastinate. Why? Well, because if he avoids working in the lab and he starts looking at other stuff and checking out social media, he gets a temporary relief from the money stress. Now, remember that when we replace difficult tasks with doing something easier, we get a temporary mood boost and a feeling of control. I know, it seems totally counterintuitive, doesn't it? But the reason why Scott keeps blowing off the stuff he needs to do at the lab is because he wants relief from the financial stress that's weighing him down overall. So the big question is this, how the hell does he stop this? Luckily, there's a 3-step simple way to cure yourself of procrastinating. And the 5-second rule will help you. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Whether you're avoiding work like Scott, avoiding cleaning like Evelyn was. Remember she said using the rules, she got up, she cleaned the living room, the dining room, did 7 loads of laundry, felt amazing. Or exercising like Jill once was. You can use the rule to beat procrastination every time. Jill learned the 5-second rule and now she 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Works out every single day, never procrastinates. Step 1, and this is going to sound kind of hard to swallow, but just bear with me because you got to do it. Step 1 to stopping the cycle of procrastinating, you got to take a second, you got to take a beat, you got to forgive yourself. This is not based on something that I think is a very kumbaya, kind of the universe is telling you. This is based on years and years of research. The first step to curing yourself of the habit of procrastinating is forgiving yourself. Our expert from Carleton University, he co-authored a paper about how students who forgave themselves for procrastinating were less likely to procrastinate on their next test than those who didn't. It sounds like a silly thing to do, but the problem that psychologists have uncovered about you and me when we procrastinate is that we're really hard on ourselves. Trish found that after she was able to forgive herself, it changed her life. She wrote, the 5-second rule, it will change your life. You won't feel sorry for yourself anymore like I used to. You'll reach your goals, live your dreams. That's right, because instead of beating yourself up, if you take a beat to forgive yourself, you will absolutely be able to stop the cycle. You may also relate to Ryan, who wrote to me about being in the beginning stages of starting a new business. He wrote, I just watched your TED talk. My impulse was to look you up and make a connection with you, so I done it. I'm in the beginning stages of starting a new product-related business and was just searching the internet for validation that I'm doing the right thing by just going for it. I'm not a wealthy person, so as much as I want to do the work, it amazes me how hard it is to force myself to spend and actually do it due to the fear of failure. Your talk definitely motivated me, and win or lose, at least I'm doing something. Thanks for what you do. I love what he says at the end. Win or lose, at least I'm doing something. It takes a lot of bravery to be able to get honest with yourself and admit how hard it is to focus on what you need to do. Another perfect example is our PhD student in the lab, Scott. Remember what he wrote? He said he, quote, had very high expectations for himself. Every time he procrastinates, you know what he feels? Guilty. Feels a little shame. Those negative feelings create even more stress. And why is it that we procrastinate? Because we feel stressed. So we avoid things that are hard so that we can feel a little bit of ease in the moment. Those negative feelings of guilt and shame, you know what Scott says? His confidence in overcoming this by himself is starting to fade, which actually makes him feel even more stressed out. See, this is why procrastination is such a trap that you find yourself in. So let's apply the advice to Scott, okay? Step number one, Scott needs to stop the cycle by forgiving himself. Scott's been doing this for a long time. His dissertation is around the corner. The dude's got work piled up in the lab. He's starting to lose confidence. So he needs to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, take a beat, forgive himself for upsetting people, for falling behind, for not working to his full potential. Because if you can recognize that your stress about finances is driving you to procrastinate at the lab, now you got a fighting chance to assert yourself and take control. And by the way, you want to take control because you want to achieve your goals. And that person that you hope to become in the future, they can help you right now. And that brings us to step two. Step number two, you're going to ask yourself after you forgive yourself, all right, what would the future me do? You're going to time travel. Allow me to explain this. So the docs team did a bunch of research on our present self, as in who are you right now versus your future self. Our future self is the person that you want to become. Now, what research proves is that when you can picture the person that you want to be in the future, it gives you the objectivity to push yourself in the present moment. We do this with kids all the time. Have you ever noticed that when a kid gets wrapped around the axle about a test score or about some social thing that's going on at school, what do most adults say to a kid? 4 years from now, you're not even going to care about this moment. That's a way of reminding a kid about who they're going to be in the future. It's a way to give objectivity to the present moment. You can do the exact same thing. And in fact, research shows that it's really effective. In experiments when researchers, for example, show you and me pictures of ourselves old, so they show me a picture when I'm 70 and they show you a picture when you're 70, guess what? You are more likely to save for retirement because you can visualize, oh my gosh, dude, retirement, it's coming at me. I can see it. You're not just thinking about it. You're now looking at the future you. And, you know, that's also an explanation for why vision boards work. People tell you all the time to create a vision board. I certainly believe in them. The reason why is it helps you visualize not being in this moment. It helps you visualize being ahead of where you are. And so you can use the version of yourself in the future you, in order to help you get through this moment. So for Scott, for example, he could create a vision board of what life looks like when he's a professor. He could also, after he forgives himself, just stop and say, all right, I've walked into lab. I don't feel like attacking that work. What would Professor Scott do? What would he do in this moment? I know what Scott would do, and Scott would blow off the lab work because I feel stressed. But Professor Scott, he's making the money. He doesn't have the financial stress. The kid's a little bit older. Things have changed. He would just attack this. You can use the exact same thing yourself. Now that gets us to number three. So number one, gotta forgive yourself because you're just stressed out. Number two, remind yourself in the future, this thing you're worried about, not going to be a big deal. Give yourself a push from the future. Number three, just get started. Please. It's all you need to do. You don't have to complete it. Don't worry about finishing it. Just get started. You know, one of the most powerful ways to create new habits, according to researchers, is to create a starting ritual. There's no better starting ritual on the planet than the 5-second rule. And now that I've done all this research, not only into habits and procrastination, but, you know, throughout this book, we're going to be talking about it, I can totally explain why just get started works. Procrastinating is a habit. So in order to get rid of a bad habit, you have to replace the bad behavior, which is avoiding work, with a new positive one, which is getting started on work, right? Makes a lot of sense. Just replacing behavior pattern. Second, the moment you feel yourself hesitate, you're going to what? Feel like doing something easier. You're going to avoid the hard work. So what are you going to do? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're going to interrupt that habit. You're going to awaken the prefrontal cortex and you're going to push yourself to start the important thing that you need to do. Finally, getting started takes us back to that concept of a locus of control.